Up next on the show, we talk a little baseball as we welcome back to the old Monday shebang our friend Evan Davis, the host of the In Play podcast, a contributor to all kinds of publications, including Fan Rag Sports and Hardball Times. Evan, welcome back.
Great to be back, Rich, as always.
Let's talk about, a guy we watched yesterday and with great interest here in New England, and you wrote about Doug Fister, who, my gosh, he's been floating around for a while, but it seemed like the end had finally come for him with a couple of releases, but at least yesterday found that lightning in a bottle again.
I mean, yeah, to a certain degree. He was able to go six innings, struck out six guys, but the thing about Fister is that over the last, like, 3 or 4 years, he hasn't really offered many teams anything beyond chewing up innings. And it's funny to forget that he was a pretty darn good pitcher when he was with the Mariners and the Tigers many years ago. But ever since, he has not really been able to find his groove. A lot of that has to do with the fact that he's lost a lot of velocity on his fastball. And he changes his repertoire fairly regularly, and I'm not too sure if that is a cause for him never being able to settle into a groove, but the results certainly haven't come. And when you're 33 years old and you get cut by the Houston Astros and have to sign a minor league deal with the Angels in order to stay in professional baseball, that usually means your time is just about up. You know, Dave Dombrowski figured he could snap up some rotation depth on the cheap, and so more power to him, and God bless Fister for being able to stick around and continue to make big league money. And the fastball looked a little better yesterday. I mean, you think he was averaging about 90 miles per hour on it. So, you know, he's finding a little bit of gas, but he had trouble commanding it. He only got 11 swing strikes throughout the day. I think that for the money that the Red Sox paid for him, which is basically nothing, it's a decent deal. But I don't know if Red Sox fans should get too excited about Fister slotting in as anything more than a fifth starter who can give you 5 or 6 innings every day and take some pressure off the bullpen.
And that may be enough for them and all they need at this point in the season. Somehow,
totally.
It's been frustrating to watch, and yet there they are, 1 percentage point behind the Yankees in the East. I'm not exactly sure how, other than the fact that the bullpen has been lights out all season for them.
I think that's true. It is a funny team. I wrote earlier in the season how the Red Sox seem to be doing okay without power, and the home run happy league, as we all know now. Every ball seems to fly out of the ballpark, and obviously there are a lot of theories as to why. But it's not really happening for the Red Sox, and they play in a pretty home run happy park as well. And yet they keep getting the job done. I think you're right. Obviously, Craig Kimbrell is the best reliever in baseball again. And Chris Sale is probably the best starting pitcher, at least in the American League right now. But don't count out Eduardo Rodriguez. I think Rodriguez is offering a great deal of quality starts every time he takes the hill. We're still waiting to see if David Price can calm down and maybe figure some things out. But for whatever reason, and I'm having a tougher time explaining it as the season goes on, but the Red Sox are winning, and I still pick them to win the AL East. And given the fact that the Yankees are starting to have some pitching struggles and are losing games, I think that pick is still right.
Red Sox take on the very surprising Minnesota Twins tonight, and it's a different kind of Twins team. Years ago in the old stadium, they had a great home field advantage. This team is going crazy with a 23-9 record on the road. What's going on with the Twins?
Yeah, the Twins baffle me. I think there are two kind of central division teams that I'm still scratching my head over as to how they keep winning. The Twins are one, the Milwaukee Brewers are another. I think that, you know, the Twins are getting carried by their pitching. Jose Barrios is finally showing everyone what he can really do after having some struggles last year. Irvin Santana is still getting guys out. He's still one of the best contact managers in the league, and that doesn't seem to be going away. And then Miguel Sano just can't stop hitting the ball as hard as humanly possible. I think he and Aaron Judge are tied at the top of the average exit velocity leaderboards right now. So, I mean, the further the season goes along, the more you have to wonder maybe they are at least at minimum a wild card contender. I mean, especially in the American League, where so many teams are just bunched up in the middle, even teams who are under 500, you kind of have to say maybe they still have a chance. And with the trade deadline coming up, I think a lot of GMs have some really hard questions to ask in the AL as to whether they're going to be buyers and sellers, and I think the Twins are one of them.
A White Sox, one of those teams that are in the process of rebuilding, and when you do that, you just kind of plug in guys, and occasionally you get lucky, and it sure seems like they've done that with a guy that you, I think, accurately described as a quad A player, but Matt Davidson is, at least in this small sample, been paying off so far.
So far, yeah. Davidson got a little taste of the major leagues like 4 years ago when he was with the Diamondbacks, but basically couldn't get out of AAA ever since. He's 26 years old. This is not necessarily the guy you expect to become an everyday major leaguer. But, you know, Ryan Schimpf was able to pull it off with the Padres last year. Why not Davidson now? He's a power guy. I mean, that's what he offers. I think every single ball that he hits pretty much goes in the air. He's hit 17 home runs so far. But I think that if you look under the hood, as great a story as it is, and I'm happy for him, and I'm happy that he's, you know, getting a chance to cash in a big league paycheck, like, this isn't going to last much longer. I mean, he strikes out now almost 40% of the time. He never walks. He's swinging and missing at everything. He chases out of the zone. And his average on balls in play is way above the league average. If you're whiffing that much and you're getting lucky on contact, like, this is going to come back down to earth, especially for a guy who's, again, 26 and been primarily a triple-A piece. So good for him. And the White Sox don't have anything to lose by throwing him out there at DH and spelling Todd Frazier every now and again at third base because, you know, Rick Hahn, the GM of the team, knows what this team is supposed to be. And they had a hot start in April, but they've faded. And, you know, only Cleveland and maybe Minnesota are expected to come out of that division and keep playing in October. So, you know, let Davidson keep making those bigger checks. Let's see what he can do. And, you know, if he's still hitting, you know, maybe you can get a couple of prospects out of him and ship him in July. Who knows? I mean, he's not going to bring back a big package, but I think Hahn is looking to sell everything that isn't nailed down. And Davidson could be one of those guys.
We're talking with Evan Davis here on Downtown. This Astros team has been every bit as good as advertised, playing great baseball right now. What do they need to do anything, and what could they do in the next month before the trading deadline to maybe lock themselves in as the best team in the American League?
That's a really, really good question. I mean, I think you'd say that left field, first base might be areas where they'd want to upgrade, but just the sheer presence of Marwin Gonzalez is making both of those moves seem less necessary. It's not that they can't, but Gonzalez, who was expected to just be a bench guy, is now one of their best hitters, if not the best hitter on the team. So it's a tough one. I think that, you know, Jeff Luhnow, who's the GM of the team, is hesitant to ship big prospects, you know, for win now moves. But I think they know that they're one of the two or three best teams in baseball and maybe the best team in the American League in terms of being in the best position to get over the line this year. So maybe you try and go out and you get a left fielder. You know, they have Yuli Gurriel, who is not necessarily lived up to the hype, but he's, you know, a league average producer, so he can suck up some at-bats at first base when Gonzalez is moving around. But, man, no, it's hard to see any holes. I mean, Altuve's been a beast. Correa is doing what we thought he'd be. Springer is carrying over his success from last season. Even Josh Reddick is hitting. You know, it's mind-boggling how good and how deep this team is. And we haven't even gotten to the pitching, which best bullpen in baseball and one of the two or three best rotations, in my view, as well.
Over in the National League, as up and down as it's been for the Cubs this year, because the Central Division's down, here they are only a game and a half out of first place.
Yeah, well, I go back and forth on this. There are days in which I am very unpleasantly surprised by the Cubs' performance. But I think that's only in relation to the fact that they put up one of the best seasons of baseball we've ever seen in the modern era last year, where they were the best defense, one of the best offenses, probably the best rotation, and it's a solid bullpen to boot. They literally did everything perfectly, and they won 103 games and a World Series title as a result, not to mention they also got one of their best players an MVP award in Chris Bryant. So, I mean, to any team like that is going to regress, especially the way that baseball is played now. There's such a small margin of talent between every single team. Even teams like the Phillies and the Padres, as bad as they are probably closer in quality to the Dodgers and the Cubs and the Astros than, say, the worst teams in baseball 30 years ago were to the best teams. So, yeah, all right. We can allow the Cubs to drop off a little bit. It's just that it happens that their entire kind of young position player core that they had decided to build a dynasty around, all of them are not hitting at the same time. You know, it's gotten to the point where even Kyle Schwarber was sent down to AAA to kind of get himself right. I don't know if I agree with that move. I think his expected production on contact is better than the results, so I think he should have been able to stick around and figure it out against big league pitching. But when you have Schwarber, Wilson Contreras, Addison Russell, Javier Baez all kind of cooling off all at the same time, it can look ugly. And the same goes for the rotation. I think Kyle Hendricks, you know, when you're a command and contact management guy, you have to do everything perfectly, and things haven't gone as perfectly for him when he's healthy. And then Arrieta, that's the real, I think the thing that scares me the most about the Cubs is just what Jake Arrieta is turning into. He's lost velocity on his fastball. You know, his mechanics might be a little off. You know, that slider cutter, which used to be, you know, one of the most devastating pitches in the game, is not biting the way that it used to, and hitters aren't biting on it. So, you know, that's an ace. That's the ace of your staff. What is he now, and how much burden can you really place on his shoulders if you really want to make another run at the title in October? I don't know. It's a weird season that the Cubs are having, but I think they're going to be fine at the end of the day.
Evan Davis, host of the In Play podcast. You see his work as well, FanRag Sports, Hardball Times, and more. Evan, always great talking baseball with you. We'll do it again before too long.
Always a pleasure, Rich. Thanks.